Ramsey TV.
Acts 17:25. Is that a great verse or what? That's the only one you need. Put that one in your arsenal. Put that in your quiver. Pull it out and shoot it at thine enemy who says that there is such a thing as human free will. No, because God gives to all life and breath and all. Acts 17:25. God gives. It's active verb. In fact, it's in the incomplete verb form. What does that mean? In the Concordant Version, Acts 17:25, He Himself gives to all life and breath and all. There's a vertical stroke in front of the verb gives. That means it's the incomplete verb form. That means it's ongoing. He is giving to all life and breath and all. So it's not like at one time in the past, He just gives to all life and breath and all, and He's done with it. No, it's a continual giving. It's incomplete. That is, it's ongoing. This is indicated in the Concordant Literal New Testament by a vertical stroke in front of the verb gives. He is giving, active verb, life and breath and all. That settles it, but how many people don't believe it? Okay, I'm going to try to calm down here from the bottom of the edge, or is it the edge of the bottom of the Floridan Peninsula? I'm going to go patiently through the scriptures. Not that I haven't been going through the scriptures, but I've been rather passionate. But my passion is not going to be dampened, but I am going to... You see, I'm dressed for formal presentation of the scriptures. And so I am going to try to be a little more professional today. And I'm going to go to Romans chapter 3. Again, a simple truth. I'm going to show you the state of humanity apart from God. Everybody knows this verse, but the weird thing is nobody believes it. Seriously, nobody. Well, 99.99% of humanity does not believe this verse. The Christian world certainly doesn't believe it. And that's strange because it's in the scripture. Romans 3:10. This is Paul. This is part of the gospel. The first part of the gospel is negative. The first part of the gospel is Paul shutting everybody up. He's closing every mouth. He's putting everybody in a reclining position of inadequacy in order to highlight Christ's accomplishment. Paul is not going to put Christ's accomplishment out there in Romans, at the end of Romans chapter 3, chapter 4, chapter 5, chapter 6, chapter 7, chapter 8. All that is Christ's accomplishment. Accomplished Christ's accomplishment. He prefaces it with humanity's inability. He has to, or else everybody's going to be just like chomping at the bit, like the horses in the gate at the Belmont Stakes or the Kentucky Derby. Everybody's going to be ready to go. Okay, God's going to ask of something of me, and ding, ding, and they're off. And no, Paul doesn't want anybody chomping at the bit in the starting gate at the Kentucky Derby. This is not a race. This is, Paul is basically shooting everybody. Paul's taking a machine gun. Paul's basically saying, I'm about to announce to you the gospel. Will everybody please line up against the wall? Oh, good. Paul's going to announce the gospel. He lines everybody up against the wall, and he goes, shooting everybody dead. Is everybody quiet now? He puts his hand to his ear. I don't hear anything. Okay, I guess we're ready to present the gospel. This is what Paul is doing. Romans 3. Not one is just, not even one. Let's start with verse 9. Undoubtedly not. We are previously charged, both Jews and Greeks, to be all under sin. According as it is written, not one is just, not even one. He's quoting Jeremiah. Not one is understanding. Not one is seeking out God. Not one. All avoid him. At the same time, they were useless. Not one is doing kindness. Not one, not even one. A sepulcher opened is their throat, with their tongues they defraud. The venom of asps is under their lips, whose mouth with imprecation and bitterness is crammed. Sharp are their feet to shed blood. Bruises and wretchedness are in their ways, and it gets worse after that. Let's go back to verse 10, shall we? Not one is just. Not even one. Charles has a little toy monkey, and he just engaged it over here. He knew that I was going to do my show, and all he has to do is squeeze it, this little toy, and it starts howling like a chimpanzee. That's what that noise was. You heard that. That's not ongoing evolution, in case you were wondering. So not one is just. Not one is seeking out God. This is interesting, verse 11. Not one is seeking out God. What's the first thing that the so-called announcers of the gospel tell you to do? You must seek God. But it's impossible. No one is seeking God. Say, well, Martin, how can I? Could somebody take that toy away from him, please? Thanks. I thought maybe after the first time. I mean, anyway. Yes, this. I do have an audience today who are not helping me one bit. And this would be Marion Travis. There you are, Marion Travis. And there is Manfred Jones. And where's the pooch? Where's the pooch who's messing up my show with his toy? Where is he? Charles, come here. Where is he? Where's that monkey? All right. The thing is, I didn't give him that monkey. You know who gave it to him? Angela. Angela was here for my housewarming party. She gave him that monkey. And when he first heard that, when he first heard it, he went nuts. Can I have that monkey? Will somebody toss it over here? As long as the monkey's a part of the show, here, just toss it over here. All right, here's the monkey. This is what the monkey thinks of evolution. What do you think of evolution? Does that mean you don't like it? Okay, thanks. That's enough for you. Okay, thank you. Would you hold that monkey for me? Not one is seeking out God. This is a critical truth, isn't it? And so someone might say to me, Martin, well, how can you answer this? This is a conundrum. You're telling me that no one is seeking out God. This is ironclad decree of God. No one is seeking out God. Everyone is sinners. No one's just. Not only is no one just, but no one can seek out God. So we have this general problem of injustice, and we can't seek out God. Gee, Martin, sounds like the human condition is hopeless. It is. It's absolutely hopeless. And I mean absolutely. No human being can do anything. Not one is just, not even one. Not one is understanding, and not one is seeking out God. All avoid him. All avoid him. And again, this is ironclad. No one can get out of this. Paul is saying we conclude all under sin. And this is weird because you hear this announced in the Christian churches. No one is righteous, no, not one. Then they tell you how to be righteous. Well, Martin, how are we righteous? Well, it cannot come from the human being. What we're looking at is a corpse of righteousness. We're looking at a person who is complete. All human beings are completely incapable of pleasing God. No one is pleasing God. No one is just. All avoid him. Not one is seeking God. And it's as though the Christians are asking a corpse to, can you at least move your lips? They're approaching a corpse and trying to cajole it to believe. Well, we can't ask you to, we're not going to ask you to do a bunch of works. We're not going to ask corpse, we're not going to ask you, Mr. Corpse, to do a bunch of works. We're not going to ask you to be righteous, but can you at least move your lips? Corpse, can't you at least move your lips and form some sort of indication that you believe in God? Tell us you have faith, because only then can you perform, only then can you be saved. But according to this verse, no one can be saved because no one's seeking out God. You can't tell a corpse, just move your lips. Can you just move your lips? I'm not asking much. I'm not asking you to do cartwheels. I'm not asking you to run a 100-yard dash. But no, it's impossible. So how does salvation come? Exactly. What did Jesus tell the disciples? Told him, a rich man can't enter into the kingdom. He basically said, you know, it's impossible for humans to do anything. And then disciples go, well, who can be saved? You remember that? Who can be saved? Jesus said, with God, all things are possible. With man, with humanity, nothing is possible. So this is the beginning. An inert form that is absolutely incapable. So forget this idea of God being a gentleman, as I think I covered that yesterday. Forget this thought that God leaves people alone. Because if you leave a corpse alone for 5 minutes, can you get the corpse's lips to move? If you leave it alone for 10 minutes, what if God leaves us alone for 15 minutes? What if God leaves the corpse alone and then plays stirring music? What if God leaves the corpse alone? What if he's a gentleman, leaves the corpse alone, and he says, I'm going to give you 10 minutes to believe in me or else? He says that to the corpse. Okay, well, that's not very fair. Okay, I'm going to give you 50 years to move your lips, at least. Give me some kind of indication that you understand me. Give me some kind of indication that you've worked up some faith so that I can save you. No matter how much time you give a corpse, it is not going to perform. Let's back this up. I think I've got that covered. Let's back this up with Romans chapter 5, verse 6. For Christ, while we were still infirm, still in accord with the era, for the sake of the irreverent, died. For hardly for the sake of a just man will anyone be dying. And we just found out from Romans 3, no one is just. For the sake of a good man, perhaps someone may even be daring to die. Yet God is commending this love of his to us, seeing that while we are still sinners, Christ died for our sake. Still sinners. Still in accord with the era. We are infirm. For Christ, while we are infirm. Some versions make this helpless. While we were helpless, Christ died for our sakes. He saved us while we were helpless. He did something while humanity was dead. He's performing for the corpses. He's doing his work on the cross at Calvary because he is an energized man. He's not in the condition of Romans chapter 3. This is what I'm telling you. Pay attention. He's not in the condition. Jesus Christ is the only human being not in the condition of Romans chapter 3. No one is seeking out God. No one is righteous. No, not one. We are charging all to be under sin except one. Only one human that's come into this world has been without sin and has lived apart from this ironclad curse upon every human being, and that's Jesus Christ. He's the only one who could effect salvation. Okay, well, Martin, once he's effected it, then we still have to get people to agree with it, right? No, they're still corpses. You're still looking for a corpse to move its lips. You give it 5 minutes, give it 5 years, give it 500 years. The corpse is not going to even move its lips. Can't you just move your lips? It's helpless. Can't you read? It's infirm. Can't you read? No one's seeking out God. Can't you read? Jesus, can't you read? We're free. We have a free will. The only thing we're free to do is fail to not seek. That's what we're free to do. We're free to not seek God. We're free to be infirm. We're free to be sinners. That's it. No one can reach even the base level of a peep of acceptance of the righteousness it takes to accept God. Isn't that a righteous act? Accepting God, accepting Christ? That's a righteous act. No one's righteous, no, not one. Oh man, Martin, you sure painted this whole thing into a bad corner. What are we going to do? How are we going to get out of that? Jesus Christ got us out of it. Well, it does take faith, doesn't it, Martin? Faith is part of it. But how does it come? This proves that the only way a person can exude any kind of faith is if it is supernaturally inserted into the person. You have to have the Spirit of God animate the corpse. You have to have the Spirit of God coming into it. You can't slap it. You can't beat it. You can't kick it. It's a supernatural act. A supernatural act has to overcome human inability, human frailty, human infirmity. And Romans 12:3 proves that. God grants to each the measure of faith. Romans 12, verse 3. God parts to each, another active word, God parts to each the measure of faith. So watch this. While we were still infirm, Jesus died on the cross. For sinners, not for believers. Jesus didn't die for believers. Do you understand? He did not die for believers. Jesus never died for a single believer, and he never saved a single believer. Jesus Christ does not save believers. He saves sinners. He saves the irreverent. He saves people who can't choose God, who don't know how to choose God, who never seek God. He saves freaking corpses because the old humanity is dead in trespasses and sins. Get it? Dead. Cannot respond. And Jesus Christ did all this fancy stuff on the cross. I'm dying for the sins of the world. Where's the world? Why aren't they helping you? Because the entire old humanity is dead in trespasses and sins, and they're not seeking God. It's then that he saved the human race. It's then, while it was still infirm, he did its best for the human race while it was inert. That's why I said Paul at the beginning, in order to proclaim the gospel, he has to level everybody. But Christians don't get it. Oh, no, we're not killed, are we? No, somehow they think that everybody else is killed. Everybody else is not able to seek God except them. Well, we're able to seek God. We're Christians, of course. We have to seek God or we're going to go to hell for eternity. No, I hate to tell you, Christians, but you're included in Romans 3. It's universal. You're included. You can't seek out God either. You know what this means? I hate to tell you this, Christians. This is going to come to utter, complete, total shock to you. It might ruin your day. But faithful are the wounds of a friend. I'm going to screw up your day today. I'm going to blow up your day. I'm going to ruin your day today. But it's going to result in you finally understanding what the hell happened at the cross and what Jesus Christ did for you. You did not accept Christ. You could not accept Christ. The only reason you believe in Christ, if indeed you do, is because God invaded your world. He was not a gentleman in the least. He invaded your corpse with Holy Spirit, and he animates you. Philippians 2, 12, 13, God is operating in us to will and to work for the sake of his delight, kind of like a hand in a puppet. Think about it. Don't shoot the messenger. God is operating in us. In. Hand in a glove. In. Get it? We're the glove. Inner leather. He's the hand. He's the spirit that's animating it. Oh, my God. He's the potter. We're the clay. And I told this to Janet. I told it to Marie in Peru. God's the potter. He's animating everything. Paul said it in Romans 17:25. In him we live and move and are. But they freaking don't believe it, because it destroys free will. And they're so stuck on free will that they read these passages and they cannot believe these passages. They are unbelievers. They can't believe these passages. No one's seeking out God. Well, we're the exception to that. We're all unjust. No one is righteous. Well, we're the exception to that. They think they're exception to everything, Christians do. They think they're exception to Romans chapter 1, verse 18, which I read to you yesterday. They think they're the exception. They're not. The only way anyone can believe, and this also underscores this fact, that belief comes after you're saved, not before. This is critical. Critical. Many people are hearing this for the first time. I'm blowing up your world. You did not choose Christ. You're unable to. Christ saved you while you were still a sinner. I hate to tell you that. Christ saved you while you were still a sinner. Your belief is the caboose. Your belief comes after you were saved. You come to believe that you were saved. Your belief doesn't make you saved. You were saved while you were a corpse. Read Romans 5. You were saved while you were infirm. You were saved while you were a sinner. You were saved while you were not seeking God, not when you were seeking God. What? Why did I seek God then? Didn't I seek God? You sought God because God animated you with his spirit, and he pushed you, and he operated in you, and he breathed in you, and he caused you to seek God, and then he gave you the faith to believe in his son. He gave you the faith. He blew it into you. This Christian message of, well, we're going to give you time to accept Christ. We're going to put the message, and then God's going to leave you alone. This is like God pulling up to a burning house. This is what it is. It's like God pulling up to a burning house, and you're in the burning house unconscious. You're overcome by smoke. You can't move. God pulls up with a fire truck, and he honks the horn and says, I'm going to give that stupid sinner 5 minutes to come out. If you don't come out, I'm going to go on to glory, and you're going to end up going to hell. God looks at his watch. The sinner is in the house overcome with smoke. You can honk the horn. Well, maybe I should honk the horn louder. They're not coming out. Maybe I'll wait another 5 minutes. Why aren't they coming up? They're unconscious on the floor. They're not seeking God. It's impossible. They're infirm. Infirm. Helpless. But that's how salvation is presented, as an offer. Well, at least God pulls outside the house. At least he's in a fancy fire truck. At least he honks the horn. Why aren't they coming out? I'll give him 10 more minutes. Then I'm going to start the tribulation. Anybody that doesn't come out of the burning house, sorry, just can't save you. Can't save you. Here's how, that's a fable. Everything I just told you, the little fireman analogy, it's a fable. But let's stick with the fireman analogy, okay? I want to stick with it. Here's how it really is. You are indeed incapacitated, overcome by smoke in the house, the burning house. You're practically dead. The firemen, God and Christ, they pull up to your house. But you know what they do? They get out of their vehicle, they put on their fireman gear, they get their axes, they put their oxygen tanks on, they run in the house, and they take your sorry, limp, unresponsive frame, and they throw it over their shoulders, and they carry you out of the house. and then they put you in the fire truck. You're still unconscious, mind you. You still don't know what's going on. They put you in the fire truck. And then you start to come to. You're groggy. I mean, and what does the fire truck represent? Salvation. That's salvation. You've been saved. You're in the fire truck. They saved you. They did it. They saved you while you were unconscious, numb nuts. So you wake up in the fire truck, and it's whisking along to glory. And you go, oh, well, what happened? You're saved. We saved you while you were unconscious in the house. I believe. Oh, great. Well, of course. Why wouldn't you believe? Because you're in the fire truck. Of course you're going to believe. Does your belief make you in the fire truck? This is stupid. Does your belief make you in the fire truck? That's what Christians say. You're not saved until you believe. But no, you believe completely after you're saved. Your belief is a gift, Romans 12:3, given to you by God to acquaint you with something that happened to you while you were passed out and inert and helpless on the floor. God honks outside the door?
I'll give him 5 more minutes.
I'll give that helpless sinner 5 more minutes. No, tell you what, this is an era of grace. I'll give that helpless sinner an hour. Yeah, why don't you give the helpless sinner 1,000 years? You can give the helpless sinner 10,000 years. The helpless sinner is not moving unless you invade their little free will world. Go into the house, knock down the door. This is what Christians, their self-righteousness is so sick because they think they got themselves, they heard the call. Wait a minute, there's a fireman out there. They somehow overcame the smoke. They somehow got themselves, it's a heroic scene. You can just see it in the movies. They're just dragging themselves out the door. What an effort. And they're looking at other bodies, other people overcome by smoke. And they're looking at other people and the other people, they're too weak. It's too bad they're weak. I think I can do it though. They grab their claw. They claw along the floor and they're reaching to the door and they open the window. They take in the air and there's God out there. 5 more minutes, the bus is leaving. I can do it. Pushing up the window and they're calling out the door. God says, you got 2 more minutes. And they're going, oh my God, they're racing. They're just crawling on the grass. They're holding on to the wheel well of the fire engine. God takes off in the glory. They just made it. Oh. And then they say, God saved me. God saved you? What about those other people who just got burned up in the house? They were just as helpless as you, but no, according to the Christian scenario, no. There's no such thing as equal opportunity helplessness. Everybody has a chance to get out of the house. You got a chance. If you're strong enough, if your self-will is powerful enough, if you have the right tools, if you have the right will to live, then you too can be saved. And yet they call it salvation by grace. Isn't that ironic? No, it's moronic. And it's not true. Faith comes after salvation, not before. I'll close with Philippians 1:29. Here's another little truth that's going to bust the bubble of some Christians today. But look, I'm a friend. Treat me as a friend, because the day you get rid of your self-righteousness is the day God has gifted you with something wonderful. Okay, you have to come to an end of yourself. God brings everybody to a realization of the truth. What truth? The truth that you are unable. The truth that your salvation is completely of Christ, not of you. But you see, you say that, many of you, but you don't believe it. You don't believe that it's completely of Christ because you crawled out of the burning house. Philippians 1:29. And I'll close with this. Maybe. For to you it is graciously granted for Christ's sake not only to be believing on him but to be suffering for his sake also. To you it is graciously granted to be believing in him. Charles is digging it. If you believe in Jesus Christ today, it has been graciously granted you. You can thank God because he pulled you out of the building limp over his shoulder and you woke up in the fire truck and he put your hands on the steering wheel and you're like, oh, I'm driving to glory. No, he put your hands on the steering wheel. He's driving. He just put your hands on the wheel to make you participate in the thing. I saved myself. No, roll the film. We pulled your sorry ass out of the house unconscious. I saved myself. You didn't save yourself. Wake up and smell the smoke of helplessness and realize that there is no one righteous, no, not one. not one seeking out God. And salvation can only come by an act of one who is outside of our circumstance, who is removed from sin, who is not suffering under the inability of flesh, and that is Jesus Christ. And to not give him the singular credit for delivering helpless, sin-wrecked people is the ultimate slap into the face of Jesus Christ. To treat the cross as an offer, to treat the 6 hours of Christ on that cross as him pulling up and politely honking the horn and then letting you try to crawl to the fire truck or not, that is the ultimate insult to the singular act that we call the death of Christ on Calvary for sin.